Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, can the Braves finish off the World Series tonight? And who it depends on? We'll get to that later on this afternoon. Continue to get ready for the college football playoff rankings as well. I'll let you know where I've been right and wrong over the past week. And also, take a look at the opening week or two here of the NBA season. Something stands out to me. We'll get to that a little bit later on. And we'll also break down everything going on here at the start of the NBA season, and the latest with Zion Williamson, with someone who just coached Zion a year ago. As joining us now is former NBA player and assistant coach, was a head coach and assistant at the college level, assistant coach in the NBA with the Pistons, last year the Pelicans, former number one pick, played in the NBA as well. It's Rex Walters who's with us now. Rex, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, Luke. Thanks for having me.
Hey, appreciate the time. Plenty I want to touch on here with you. So to begin here, let's kind of just jump around the league, looking at a few different teams. And the big story in the NBA today are some of the comments made after the Celtics blew that big lead against the Bulls. So let me ask you first about the Chicago Bulls, who are 6-1. I don't know how many people saw that even this early in the season, the Bulls would have the best record in the NBA. When you look at the Bulls this year, is this legitimate? Is this really one of the better teams we could have in the league this season?
Well, I really think they have a chance to be really good. When you add the pieces that they had, you talk about DeMar DeRozan. They made the trade last year for Nikola Vucevic. Lonzo Ball, who I got to coach last year, really good piece for them. Alex Caruso has championship pedigree now coming from the Lakers. They've done a really, really good job of adding the right pieces. So, and they're missing Kobe White, which I think is a big part. They'll give them some more bench scoring. So this is a very dangerous team. They should be somewhere 1-5, I would think, at the end of the season in terms of playoff positioning. They've got a chance to do some really cool things.
On the flip side, this is a Celtics team that we've been waiting these last couple of years to take that step forward, go win a championship. And last season, only 500. This year, they're off to a 2-5 start, win this at home. It's been a disappointing year and a half for the Celtics. When you look at this Boston team, where do you see maybe some of the problems or the issues right now with Boston and underachieving a little bit for the last year and a half?
Well, all along, I thought that they were going to take a step back. When you lose a guy like Kemba Walker, and then that they made the move last year, and Daniel Theis is no longer with them, those are two very important pieces. Like, Schroeder has done a good job in starting for them, but he's not a Kemba Walker type. Like, Kemba Walker is really an assassin, a guy, and he has been banged up. So I understand the move, but also, and this is nothing against Ime Udoka, like, Brad Stevens is a tried-and-true coach that's been through the wars, coached in Eastern Conference Finals, a high-level coach. When you go from that, and this is nothing against Ime, but now you got a first-year coach who's got an awful lot of experience, and I'm sure he's going to do a very good job. But something's going to be lost when you're learning maybe a new system, you're hearing a new voice. So they're really in a big transition time with new pieces and a lot of pressures being put on, obviously, Jason Tatum and then Jaylen Brown.
When we enter this season, you know, the belief was that the Nets and the Lakers, once again, were the favorites with their big threes, at least if Kyrie were to be out there for Brooklyn. Both teams off to a little bit of a slow start. Both teams 4-3 right now. It's so early in the season. Do you have any concern at this point for both Brooklyn and or the Lakers so far the first couple of weeks into the year?
Well, with the Nets, the whole thing is, are they going to get Kyrie back? Is the mandate going to come down? I don't think Kyrie's going to come off of his positioning. Maybe he will, but you're talking about a guy that was 27 points per game, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, with a 50-40-90, 50% from the field, 40% from three, 90% from three. You can't, there's nothing you can do to replace a guy like that unless you're going to bring in a top five, top ten player. Like, every time KD has the ball now, he's going to see more pull-in, more paint protection, going to make his job a lot more difficult. Harden is rounding himself into shape. He's at about 19-7-8, so his numbers are starting to go up. But he came into camp a little bit out of shape, and he's working himself into it, not knowing that Kyrie wasn't going to be there. So there's more pressure on Harden. KD is doing a really good job of keeping them afloat. But, you know, they've also lost a guy like Jeff Green. DeAndre Jordan is now with the Lakers. So they've lost some rim protection and some veteran experience with that. And it hasn't necessarily worked out. So the Brooklyn Nets, a little bit more concerned. But the biggest concern is, are they going to get Kyrie back? With the Lakers, it's a little bit different because they added a really good piece in Russell Westbrook. But with that, you got to get used to playing with a guy that is ball dominant, needs the ball in his hand, and they did lose some really good defense. When you talk about losing a Montrezl Harrell, a Kyle Kuzma, and KCP, and Tavis Caldwell-Pope, those are three really good pieces that are really starters for Washington that are now not with the Lakers. So LeBron is doing a great job of keeping them afloat. They've taken maybe a little bit of a step back defensively. They're not quite as good as they were last year. They're 16th right now in the NBA. So they've got their work cut out. And Frank Vogel, he's getting criticized, but he's had three different teams in three different years, and they're really going to try to find themselves. The great thing is they do have LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook. So once they get guys healthy again, when they get some of these guys, Talen Horton-Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, Trevor Ariza, Wayne Ellington, that will add more shooting. I think they'll take a step up once those guys get healthy.
Talking with Rex Walters, who played in the NBA for a number of years, former first-round pick and a longtime coach as well at the college and NBA level, was on the Pelican staff a year ago. I saw you had a tweet the other day, and you can always follow Rex on Twitter as well, at Coach Rex Walters. But I saw you had a tweet the other day about, you know, what has led to early success in the NBA, playing defense and teams that can shoot the three ball. For you, somebody who first entered the NBA about 30 years ago, where are you on this trend in the NBA or just basketball in general, where it's become so much about the three-pointer? What's your stance or belief on this movement?
Well, it's not only become about the three-pointer, it's become about skill. And now when I was playing, your ones, twos, and threes maybe should have shot it, right? But your fours and fives really never did. Well, now the NBA, you know, a lot of times you'd better have four guys that can shoot it, but a lot of times in the great teams have five guys out there that can all shoot the ball from three. So that gives you just great spacing for your elite players that can get downhill. They don't see a loaded-up defense. So I'm all for it because I love skill. I love watching guys like Jokic play. I like the fact that Brook Lopez, who was primarily a post player, now can step out and shoot threes. So I like that because it does open up the floor for offensive players. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to defense. Are you going to be willing to eliminate layups, defend without fouling to put people on the line, keep them off the line? And then, yes, you're going to have to close hard and make sure that you're making either a great contest or taking them off that three-point shot. Those two things, defense and three-point shooting, are a big, big factor right now in the NBA, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Let's focus on the two local teams to us here. The Atlanta Hawks, they make that coaching change last year and take off, make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, surprise a lot of people. They're off to a little bit of a slow start this year, and again, everything here in our conversation, taken with a little bit of a grain of salt because it's so early in the year. But any concern with the Hawks that last year was kind of just the stars aligning when a new coach took over? Or from what you saw, the way they ended last season, should we have high expectations again for this Atlanta team this season?
Well, Nate McMillan did a great job. But also, you got to give Travis Schlenk a lot of credit. He brought in a really good roster, made the right moves, surrounded Trae Young with really good shooting and some defense. I think one thing now is last year no one was expecting it. And now every time they go into arena, every team knows, hey, this is a team to be reckoned with. We're going to have to bring our A game to have a chance to win. So, you know, they have kind of been up and down a little bit. Losing at Cleveland, that's a game they should have won earlier in the season. Philadelphia is not a bad loss at all. And then Washington at Washington, not a bad loss. So they're right kind of where they should be. I think that they want to get completely and totally healthy. They haven't had Lou Williams, a steady dose in for all seven games. Kevin Herter's missed a game. Danilo Gallinari, who's a big piece of their puzzle, has missed three games. So it's always about also health, like keeping our best players on the floor. And then, yes, defending at a high level and then keeping the floor space so we can attack from three, and then really inside it out, getting to the rim, but also having that three-point threat, which they have.
And when it comes to the Hornets, I've become a quick fan of LaMelo Ball. As you mentioned, you coached his brother. When you watch LaMelo, what's the ceiling? What do you see LaMelo being capable of here in his NBA career?
Well, I think he's definitely a guy that's a future all-star. The things that he can do on the floor, and he's been a little bit up and down. He's had some really good games. I think that they put some really good pieces. Ish Smith has been a great backup point guard for him, and LaMelo really seems to be all about winning. I think that they're a young, athletic, very, like, long, athletic team, which is really good for LaMelo. So he's a future all-star. He's a guy that can really take Charlotte to another level, be a true playoff team. They've gotten off to a good start this year. So the future is very bright for him. He really is a guy that can be a face of the NBA.
I think the Ball family, and you know, it's another conversation, fair or otherwise, but there's a bad reputation about them from the outsiders, mostly because of the father and the antics and this and that. You coach Lonzo Ball. What was it like just coaching him last year in New Orleans?
He was phenomenal, to be honest with you. He's a really hard worker. He's quiet, which is so different than LaVar. He's very quiet, very purposeful in how he approaches every practice, really wants to get better, will spend extra time, really bought in defensively. He's a guy that is a 3-and-D guy, but he's not just a 3-and-D guy because of the way he can handle the basketball, his unselfishness, players love playing with him. And he can guard multiple positions. So it was really fun because you see all the stuff on social media. You hear all the stuff about his father. I think his father is just doing a really good job of promoting his sons. But it also puts undue pressure at times on his sons. Well, Lonzo was phenomenal to work with. Really good, positive attitude. Very quiet, but you'd like to see him grow a little bit out of that. But I think they've made a great move getting him to Chicago. And he's done some really, really good things for that team to help them become a winner.
Was LaVar, you know, was he around a lot? Was he involved at all in terms of just being there and having his voice heard at all last year in New Orleans?
Yeah, did not see him one time. I know, and it was, you know, sometimes the best thing that can happen is you can get away from your parents. Nothing against your parents, but just becoming a man on your own. When he was in L.A., you know, I coached with him. LaVar was better. There was a lot of attention to that. LaVar really now, LaMelo, well, to be on their own as a young man and not have to be the distraction of having to deal with your parents in the front row watching every single game, having a lot of family and friends at those games, to deal with stuff that takes you right from doing your job. And they've done both of them have done a great job of doing their job. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that there's a lot of land between Charlotte, Chicago, and L.A.
Before we let you go, talking with Rex Walters, I do have to ask you about Zion Williamson, who is here from South Carolina. Of course, the big star drafted there by New Orleans. So first, let me just ask you, what was it like working and coaching Zion last year in New Orleans?
Again, really young, wanted to win, wanted to learn, wanted to grow, very accepting of coaching. He was really phenomenal. At training camp, he was great. He did not miss one day of training camp, came in. Really accepted coaching. Like, it was a lot of fun to be around him, Lonzo, B.I., that entire team. They were just young and trying to learn how to win. And so hopefully at some point, and we've already talked about this, you got to put defense and shooting around him. And I think at some point New Orleans, because Jonas Valanciunas has been a great addition to that team, but you're going to have to add some more veteran pieces that bring that defense and shooting, but also have an understanding of what it takes to win this league. I think as this team gets older, and obviously they need to get Zion healthy, right? 1-6 is about right when you think about taking him out of the equation. They've also missed Brandon Ingram for a game. So once they get him back, once those guys continue to grow together, I think down the line they can be a pretty good team. But I think it's going to be tough this year, and it'll be interesting to see how long Zion is out. But he was phenomenal. Phenomenal to coach, great to be around, a great, great kid, great, great young man.
Yeah, he seems like a great kid from all the interviews or anything you see from the outside looking in. As just basketball fans, how concerned should we be, you know, even just about his weight here moving forward as he tries to stay healthy and put together a great career?
Well, I think, number one, when you're a big guy, it's really hard to stay in shape when you have an injury like that, when you're taken off of your feet. I think that the things that he's going to have to do, and I think you've seen other players evolve in this in terms of how they eat, the nutrition, how they approach every single day in terms of what they put into their body, but then also about how they take care of their body, their flexibility, their strength training, and trying to get the most out of themselves. You know, he's been banged up in pretty much all three of his years. He was pretty healthy for us until the end of the season last year, so he's got to figure out a way how to handle that, how to stay off of the training table as much as possible in terms of staying healthy, and then watching what he eats, really diving into that, getting himself in the best shape possible. Because it is a concern. When a guy 6'7" and over 300 pounds, that's a lot of pounding on the joints, on the ankles, on the knees, on the back. So for him to have a long and sustained career, he's going to have to do that. And he's going to also have to continue to stretch his game out so he's not just always attacking the rim. He has some stuff where he can, and he works at it. He does work on his three-point shooting. So I think that's something that will evolve with him as well.
Talking with Rex Walters, so many things I would love to get to, more things I would love to talk about with you, Rex. Before we let you go, I'll let you get out of here on this. Roy Williams announced his retirement, and he's got some ties here to the area. He's got a home here. He vacations here in the area, not far from us. We see him around and about. What was it like playing for Roy Williams at Kansas?
Oh, it was the time of my life. It really set me up for some great, great opportunities going forward. If I wouldn't have went to Kansas, I'm not a 16th pick in the first round of the New Jersey Nets. I don't play 7 years in the NBA. I don't get a chance to experience a Final Four. But more importantly, the kind of man and example that he set for me was really, really good. Hardworking, highly organized, and really, really cares about young people and his team. He went to war for his players, all the people that were involved in that program. So that was a great, great example for me, number one, as a young man, as a basketball player, and a future pro, but also someone that wanted to coach someday. He had an unbelievable impact on me and my life and really my family because he allowed me to do some things for my family that I might not have been able to do if I wasn't around him.
Awesome stuff. Appreciate all the time. He's Rex Walters, played in the NBA, coached in the NBA, coached in college basketball. He's on Twitter at Coach Rex Walters. Great insight, Rex. Appreciate the time. We'll have to do it again with you down the road.
That'd be great, Luke. Thanks for having me, my man.
Hey, pleasure's all mine. Appreciate it. Rex Walters, who, as he said, spent 7 years in the NBA, first round pick. And then, you know, he most recently was coaching with the Pistons and the Pelicans. You look at the NBA right now, who are the two last place teams? In the East, it's the Pistons. In the West, it's the Pelicans. Maybe they should bring back Stan Van Gundy and Rex Walters to those two teams because they're both with one win in last place early in the season here to start the year. Appreciate the time from Rex Walters on Twitter at Coach Rex Walters. Great insight. Coming up, speaking of which, we don't do a ton of regular season NBA, especially this early in the year. But there is a new rule that is having a big impact on the NBA so far. And if you are an NBA guy, or maybe you don't start paying attention until Christmas like a lot of people, or maybe even the playoffs, there's this new rule that you probably should be paying attention to. And we'll get to that when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Coming up, the new rule that is having a big impact on the NBA. Get to that here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Now, this is a great song. This is one of my favorites from the decade of the 60s. And this isn't the original, but I think this is the better version. And it's a great song. You know, this was originally by, of course, you don't care about Walk Away, Renee, but let me tell you anyways. It was originally about the band The Left Bank, which I imagine that must have been a one-hit wonder, right? I have no idea who The Left Bank is. But they wrote this song. The singer of the band wrote that song when he was like 17 years old. And if you listen to the lyrics, it really is a great song that he put together all the way back then. And then the Four Tops covered it, and that's, I think, the more popular version. But what a great song. And, you know, Motown was never about the drums, but the drums in that song are fantastic, especially right off the top of the Four Tops. The drums drive that whole song, the Four Tops version of Walk Away, Renee. But Motown was never about the drums. And I know Marvin Gaye started as a, you know, he was a drummer. But there's a great story about the studio they had for Motown Records, you know, in Detroit. They used to have to sneak drums in through the back door because there were never any drums there. It wasn't about the drums. A little bit percussion in Motown music originally, right? You have like the tambourine and that stuff, but not like a drummer, you know, with drum fills and solos and the heavy drums that you can hear leading the song. That was never really the case. And so for like the recording of that song, they had to sneak drums into the studio to be able to do it, because back then, like, Berry Gordy was like, no drums, no drum sets. We didn't even have a drum set at the studio. It wasn't about drums for Motown. It's about great vocals and harmonies and, you know, having the backing of females' voices and some of the percussions, but not so much a drum set, a drum kit. But anyways, the drums in that song, fantastic. That's a great song. One of my favorites from that era. Love that song. Great jam on a Tuesday. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Rex Walters, who was fantastic. Played in the NBA, coached in the NBA, including last year with Zion Williamson. You've probably seen the photos and videos going around of Zion. Doesn't look great. Now, Rex made a good point. It's a foot injury. So that's tough. If you ever had a foot injury and you have to be off your feet, right, and especially for an athlete, you're used to exercise and work. It's hard when you have to kick your feet up and you can't be very active. It's an easy way to put some weight on. But if you look at Zion and compare his rookie season to now just a couple years later, right, the images are pretty startling, and that was the concern for him coming into the league, and now seems to be an even bigger concern about him staying in shape. Because also, as you know, right, the better shape you stay in, the healthier you are. You put a few pounds on, even just a few pounds can make a big difference on your joints, on your bones, especially on your knees, your running, your jumping, all that sort of stuff. Puts more stress on your body. So for Zion, already with the injury concerns, and now you pack on a few extra pounds, it's like a never-ending cycle here. You know, now you continue to potentially get yourself into injury situations because you can't stay in shape potentially, and then because you're injured, it makes it harder to stay in shape, and it's, you know, never-ending. But appreciate the time from Rex. Great insight on everything going on in the NBA to start the season. We're very early in the NBA season, of course, and we don't do a ton of NBA regular season talk. But I do find this interesting. And we touched on this a little bit with Rex last segment. And if you ever miss anything from the show, such as our conversation with Rex Walters, you can find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. But the Nets are the favorite in the East. They were to begin the year. I think they still are. I mean, them and the Bucks. But the Nets are only 4-3 to begin the season. Right now, 8th best record in the East. And that's while winning the last two games. They started off under 500. The Hawks were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, one of the last two teams in the East, and yet they won last night to just get over 500. They're 4-3 as well, in 9th place in the Eastern Conference. And we're very early on, just 7 games in, but these are two teams that are struggling to begin. And the Hawks, for them to get to a 4-3 record, they beat the two worst teams in the league, literally, and then they beat the Mavericks in Jason Kidd's first game coaching there. But the Hawks, a few things have been wrong for them, have been causing issues for them. Number one, they've attempted the second most deep twos in the league, but are bottom six in three-point attempts. So really poor shot selection. They're not getting to the rim enough, and if you're going to shoot from the outside, you might as well make it a three. Might as well go for 3 points instead of taking a deep two. The Hawks are taking more deep twos than all but one other team and not enough threes. So you don't need the analytics to tell you you're not being very efficient there. You're not maximizing your opportunities. You're taking deep shots but settling for 2 points instead of three. And then you have Kevin Huerter, who's been terrible, especially from beyond the arc. That doesn't help either. But also, their star, Trae Young, isn't getting to the foul line. The NBA changed the rules this offseason. And I'm guilty of it, too. I haven't watched a ton of NBA basketball. I dive in, you know, on Christmas time. Christmas is the big day. I watch, you know, our family, we watch all the games on Christmas. And then as football starts to wind down, you turn your attention to the NBA, and I get real heavy into it second half of the year. So maybe you haven't started paying attention yet. You're not watching a lot of NBA. We have football every night. We got the Braves in the World Series. But the NBA changed the rules this year to no longer reward players that go out of their way to initiate contact to draw fouls, which is great. I love this rule. There is nothing worse than watching these players that the classic when you bring the ball up the floor and a defender's trailing behind you and you do like a back pedal or you just suddenly stop and the defender runs into you and they would get a foul. Chris Paul is notorious for that. And like that stuff, that's tacky. Just play the game. Stop trying to draw fouls. Right, go try to score. Get to the basket and actually finish the shot instead of just jumping into somebody, throwing the ball up, and getting two free foul shots. And Trae Young and James Harden really were the most frequent offenders of this. And this year, they're struggling, as are their teams. Trae Young averaged 9 foul shot attempts per game over the last 2 years. This year, he's down to 4 foul shot attempts per game. He's getting to the free throw line only twice a game. That's 2 trips, right? Not counting potential and ones. Get to the free throw line twice in a game. Less than half than he's used to. And therefore, his points per game are down 8 from just 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Trae Young averaged 30 points. He's down to 22 this year. He's even had conversations. He's been on record saying he's had conversations with the head of officiating about the rule change. And then you have James Harden, who in the last 6 years, Harden has averaged 11 foul shot attempts per game. This year, he's down to 5, cut by more than half. And that has led to Harden averaging just 18 points per game, the lowest total for him since 2012, and the Nets are struggling. These guys aren't getting the cheap calls and easy points from the free throw line. And when you don't do that, it throws off their entire game because that was their big part of their game. That was a big way in which they would score. That's how they've been playing their game. It's not great to watch. That's why I love the rule change by the NBA. Like James Harden, I can appreciate and acknowledge he's one of the best players in the league while also telling you he's probably the star I least like to watch because his game's ugly. But it throws you off your entire game when you don't get those calls, right? You make plays purposely trying to get a call from the official, and when you don't get the call, it leaves you off balance, it leaves you in a bad spot. You were relying on that whistle. Therefore, it could lead to turnovers, to 4 shots. And I had said at the start of the year, if I was Brooklyn, I would rather have Kevin Durant and James Harden anyways. We have this whole issue with Kyrie. I thought, that's okay. I think that's the better combo, Durant and Harden instead of, say, Durant and Kyrie. And just forget about the Kyrie drama, and he can be over there, and you go out and you play with these two, and you'll be fine. But with this rule change and the impact, like Rex Walters said last segment, I think the Nets are missing Kyrie. I think I had it all wrong. And if I had to swap one out for the other, at this point, I think I'd rather have Durant and Kyrie than James Harden. Because Harden's game has now changed, he needs to adjust. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, that's not so much the case. And I think the Nets will be fine as the season goes on, but it's now on these guys to adjust. And the best always do. So that's the test. That's the challenge for James Harden and Trae Young, because they're not the first athletes that have to deal with a rule change. They changed all sorts of rules because of Jabbar back in the day. They outlawed dunks because of Jabbar. And you know what he did? He developed a lethal hook shot and scored the most points still in NBA history. They had to Tiger-proof golf courses because Tiger Woods was so dominant, and he was out-driving everyone. So they changed the layout of golf courses. Didn't matter. Tiger still continued to win all the time. They changed the mound in baseball because of really how dominant Bob Gibson was specifically in 1968. I mean, it was really a pitcher-friendly sport at the time because of the mound, but most notably Bob Gibson. So they changed the mound, make it harder on the pitchers. And Gibson came back the next year, posted a 2.1 ERA, came back the following year and won the Cy Young. It didn't matter. I mean, this is kind of similar to what the Astros are going through, where the Astros are trying to prove that it wasn't just the sign stealing, that they are a talented team, that they didn't just win because they were cheating. And that's similar to these guys, these athletes over the years. For Bob Gibson, he had to show, it's not just the mound. You think I'm only good because we have a high mound? Okay, lower the mound. I'll still win the Cy Young Award. I'll still be the best pitcher in baseball. Right, for Jabbar, it wasn't just because he was bigger and more athletic and could dunk all the time. All right, take away my ability to dunk. I'm still going to score the most points in NBA history. And now for guys like James Harden and Trae Young, they have to prove it wasn't so much about the calls. drawing fouls, being able to get to the free throw line, that there is a lot more to their game. Prove that they are still some of the best scorers and players in the league. It's what the best athletes have always done. And it goes back to something I said to start the show about recreating yourself. I think the Chiefs kind of need to recreate themselves. There are people in life that struggle to move on from something, have to find a way to recreate themselves. Right? They don't want to move past their high school years or the hometown they grew up in. They don't want to move past college because it's the best 4 years of your life, as they say. They don't want to go be an adult. Sometimes you have to. You have to recreate things. You have to figure things out as you go. You have to change some things. And people do it professionally all the time. Actors, musicians, you got to rediscover yourself. You got to make some adjustments. Great athletes have done it as well over the years. Will guys like James Harden and Trae Young be able to as well? Their free throws are down. Their points are really down. And their teams are struggling right now. The best players always adapt. And the best players are also versatile enough that it doesn't matter. Right? Like Kevin Durant is going to be just fine. Even a LeBron James, right? You're going to be just fine. They could change this rule. Okay, that's fine. I have different ways to score. I don't need to rely on the whistle. For a Trae Young and a James Harden, it's now on them to show, similar to the Astros. The Astros are trying to say, hey, we are actually a good team. We didn't have to cheat. It wasn't just banging on the trash cans why we were successful. For James Harden and Trae Young, show us that it's not just because I get to the free throw line 12 times a game. I can score in a number of different ways. I am one of the best players in the league. You're going to have to show us now with the new rule change. And I love that rule change because it gets rid of these cheap plays and corny basketball, and it's bad to watch. It's ugly. I like it better now when these guys aren't just fishing for whistles. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
I'm okay. That was very well said, what you just said. And I don't hope you don't mind me changing the subject a little bit.
Yeah, go for it.
But I have a big criticism as to what the Atlanta Braves are doing tonight.
Uh-huh.
Max Fried, his last few starts were horrible. Even though he's got 5 days rest, why not go back, come back with Anderson? Houston's pitchers only had 3 days rest. Why not go there? Why put yourself up for game seven? Because Fried has looked horrible, absolutely horrible. And if Bobby Harton, if you're listening, Fried looks horrible. It's another mistake by your rookie manager into the World Series. Now, second thing, your top 10. Now, I don't want to make this sided towards Ohio State. But I want you to explain to me why Wake Forest is ranked so high, and yet North Carolina is favored by 2.5 points this Saturday. Now, how does that add up?
Yeah,
that they're ranked so high.
Yeah, it's a good question. Wake Forest may get exposed this weekend. Vegas always knows. Kentucky was in a similar spot this past weekend, where Kentucky was an underdog at Mississippi State, despite being the number 12 team in the country. And I thought, that's odd. Why is Kentucky an underdog? It seemed like easy money. But I stayed away for a reason, and Vegas was right. Kentucky played terrible and lost. So now I'm fearful that the same thing could happen to Wake Forest, where as an underdog you're wondering, oh, they should go and beat UNC, and now they could lose and get exposed on Saturday. And if that's the case, then certainly I would drop them in my rankings. But as of now, they are undefeated. They've won all their games in the ACC. They're not playing, in the American Conference. So I do have to give them some props to this point for winning all their games. That may change Saturday against UNC, and then I would adjust accordingly. But so far, I do have to give them credit for winning all the games that they've played.
The way that this should be done is by the RPI, because teams like Cincinnati play nobody now the rest of the year. So how do teams gain? And my Ohio State Buckeyes play in Michigan State and going to play Michigan. Well, it should be done by RPI. Well, yes, Ohio State lost, but they lost to the number 3 Oregon team. And I agree Oregon should be in front, but you could pass over them because you're going to play stronger teams, and Oregon isn't. Alabama is just a household name, but they lost to a non-ranked team. It doesn't add up, and I'm interested to see what happens tonight. Fortunately, Ohio State has ranked teams to play in the future, and it could improve their ranking.
Yeah, and it's a good point made, and appreciate the call as always, Jim. I mean, they play favorites. Like Alabama, people will say for Alabama, Jim just mentioned there, Alabama lost to an unranked Texas A&M. And yet many believe they'll be the number 2 team in the rankings tonight. And then when you look at other teams, we'll hold those losses against them. Even examples earlier, like Michigan, Michigan, they lost to a number 8 team. Or Notre Dame lost to, right now, the number 2 team in the rankings. But nobody gives them any thought whatsoever. And I don't think they're as good as Alabama. But the point being, right, like, if we're going to give Alabama so much credit for losing to an unranked team with a backup quarterback at the time, I mean, we have to be fair. We have to do the same thing across the board. And also say for Michigan, like, yeah, bad loss. They blew that lead. But, I mean, it was to a top six team in the country on the road. Right, Notre Dame, their only loss is to Cincinnati, who is the number two team in the country. But you never talk about those teams. We just focus on Alabama. Much like Cincinnati, people are pointing to their, and I'm guilty of this as well, but I've also acknowledged the other side, people are pointing to their close victories and how they struggled this past week with, who was it, Tulane? Well, the same people won't mention that Oklahoma struggled with that same team. Right, we'll hold it against Cincinnati, but maybe not in Oklahoma. Oregon beats Ohio State, and yet you still put Oregon behind Ohio State, right? Why? Because, you know, they don't have the same cachet, the same brand name. They're in the Pac-12. It's not Ohio State in the Big Ten. So there's a lot of inconsistencies or biases or whatever it may be, falling in love with some of the big names that we don't remain consistent across the board. And a lot of hypocrisy in all of this. But I'll be curious to see how they order the teams tonight. You know Alabama will be up there. You know Ohio State will be up there. Because, again, as I've always said before, it's about the big names. And I get why it works this way. Just like, you know, if you were putting together a wedding, you'd want to be able to choose who's sitting at which table. You know, that's the idea here. They're putting together this playoff. They want to be able to choose, despite the results or what happens, who they want to be in the playoff field that's going to bring the most interest and most money at the end of the day. That's still what it's about. So for Alabama, we'll treat them differently than a Michigan or a Notre Dame. We'll treat Oklahoma and Cincinnati different. We'll even treat Oregon and Ohio State differently. And that's why when I said there's four questions we need answered tonight, one of them is about Wake Forest, because I don't think Wake Forest will get a lot of respect either. Because it's just Wake Forest from the ACC. Nobody really cares about them. The ACC isn't that great. I mean, but they are undefeated. You can only do so much. They've won all their games. What more do you want from them? Quite a few of them by blowouts. But Jim brings up a good point. It was Kentucky this past week that was an underdog on the road in a game that you probably looked at and thought, why is Kentucky an underdog? They're the number 12 team in the country. Mississippi State, they're 500. And Kentucky was lousy and got beat by two scores. That line stood out to me. Why is Wake Forest an underdog against a 500 UNC team on the road? Vegas always knows. Wake Forest may be exposed this weekend. And then that really shakes up things for the ACC and Wake Forest's case. But for the time being, they're undefeated, so I have to give them credit for that. And I put them at number 6 in my rankings is where I had them. In regards to the Braves, we'll get more into this coming up next hour. But I actually do like the Braves' pitching plan because you do have a one-game buffer. Yes, you would love to avoid Game 7. But I do think this is the best move for the Braves to go Fried and Anderson in the next two. And I actually think it gives the Braves an advantage tonight because the Astros are, in fact, on short rest. And I got my starter on long rest here against their guy on short rest. And then they may have to go bullpen game 7. So I think the Braves are at an advantage here pitching-wise. And because you have the 3-2 lead, I go Fried Anderson and take my chances I win one of those two games. If I was down 3-2, yeah, I don't know if I'd feel as good putting Fried out there. But you do have the lead. I know you don't want, you know, you want to put your foot on the gas, put your foot on their throat, not lead to a game 7. But you do have a little bit of a buffer. And Fried was really good throughout the season. I take my chances with Fried and Anderson trying to win one of those two. Coming up, how committed would you be to a Halloween costume? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Committed would you be to a Halloween costume? Get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. And a little bit later on, will the Braves finish things off tonight and win this World Series? Hey, don't forget, the 2021 FanTalk Families campaign has begun for the 32 families staying at the Ronald McDonald House. Started yesterday, it'll go until December 10th. And we're just a couple weeks away from one of the biggest days of the fundraiser, Bobby's 12-hour Radiothon, which is coming up Thursday, November 18th. Looking forward to that. And we are also looking for businesses who would like to donate any goods or services that could be used for auction items during said Radiothon. So if you are interested, reach out to Bobby or head over to charlestonsportsradio.com to help out. Last year during COVID, donations were, you know, a little off, of course. Still a tough time for some people, but still able to raise over $30,000 last year and looking to do even more this year. So it's one of the best things that is done around here. I'm always proud just to be involved in the sense that I work in the same building as Bobby. That's my whole involvement with it. And I take pride in the fact that just being in the same building as Bobby, who does this every year, it's a great thing. So if you can help, it's always greatly appreciated, of course. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com or reach out to Bobby himself. The Radiothon is coming up November 18th, and we're off and running with the Fan Talk Families campaign until December 10th to help the 32 families staying at the Ronald McDonald House. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Travis is with us. Travis, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well, sir. How are you doing today?
Doing good. What's up?
I first want to say go Braves. Let's go ahead and win the game tonight and get it done and over with.
Yes, I hope so.
My question to you, let's say Cincinnati and Wake Forest both run the table and win their respective divisions. Do you think either one of them or both get into the Final Four?
Okay, well, in this hypothetical, would Oklahoma remain undefeated?
More than likely, unfortunately, yes.
And then would Michigan State, do you see Michigan State losing, or would they be undefeated as well?
I think they're going to end up losing one. I think Ohio State's going to beat them.
Okay, so then in this scenario, we would have Georgia. What about my last question to you, SEC title game. If it's Alabama-Georgia, who would you think wins that game?
I finally think this is the year Georgia and Kirby Smart get the proverbial Alabama monkey off the back.
Okay, so in your scenario, for me, that crosses off Alabama. Georgia would obviously be in. Oklahoma's undefeated, so I would have to put them in. And then the debate would come down to the two teams you mentioned, Cincinnati, Wake Forest, and then a Big Ten champion that would probably only have one loss. That's a great question. I think, me personally, I would have to put Wake Forest in. If you give me an undefeated ACC champion, I have to put them in. And then my debate would be between an undefeated Cincinnati and, let's just say, a one-loss Ohio State. And I would guess, just a guess, I think the committee would prefer Ohio State, so I think Cincinnati would get left out, but I don't think you leave out an undefeated ACC champion. So that would just be my wild prediction. If I was making the choice, I probably would take Cincinnati because they are undefeated and there's not another undefeated team to leave them out, and I have to give credit for victories. But for the committee, that's probably worst-case scenario, is the idea of potentially having half your playoff field made up of Cincinnati and Wake Forest. That would not be a very good Final Four.
See, I agree with that. I think Ohio State is a sexier name, a bigger name, which is what people want. But Cincinnati did finish strong last year, you know, minus their bowl game to Georgia. But they've kind of been towards the middle top the last season and a half. And I think it's really hard to leave them out if they're able to pull it off and run the table.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I just think, you know, group of five, and I appreciate the call, Travis, group of five, you know, the committee, I think most people are elitist and look down on that. And I have been up until this year, but now I'm on the side of the little guy, and I'm pulling for Cincinnati. But that's where things could get complex. What Cincinnati needs, and you can make a strong case that it shouldn't even be necessary, but I do think just to be safe, what they need is for these teams to get knocked off. Because if it comes down to a debate between a bunch of undefeated teams, I don't know how many of those Power 5 teams Cincinnati would pass over if they all have the same record. Because, like, for example, Cincinnati, they have their two good wins, Indiana and Notre Dame. And Indiana's not as good this year. But I still give Cincinnati credit. Indiana was a top 20 team at the start of the season. Since he scheduled them, went there to go play them in their building and beat them. So, again, I mean, how much more can we expect from Cincinnati? A lot of teams don't even want to schedule them in the non-conference because that's not an easy enough non-conference game. They went to Notre Dame. They went to Indiana, beat them both. They're undefeated. But the problem for Cincy is their opponent's combined record is under 500. And when you look at the rest of their schedule, SMU was that last big game for them, and now SMU just lost. So that matchup won't look as good. So that's just the debate, that if you have an Alabama that's undefeated, or pardon me, not Alabama. Oklahoma, that's undefeated. Wake Forest, undefeated. Cincinnati, undefeated. Are we putting Cincinnati ahead of both of those Power 5 conference champions? I don't know, because the competition just isn't as strong. So that's why they need some help. But that scenario we just ran through, which I find interesting, but that would be a pretty lousy Final Four, right, if that's how it plays out? Because if Alabama loses, you can't put them in with two losses, especially if you have all those undefeated teams elsewhere. Georgia would they're in. They're already in, you know, as long as they don't slip up in the regular season. Even if they lose in the SEC title game, you still put Georgia in. They just can't lose very winnable games the next couple of weeks. They shouldn't even be challenged. So you figure Georgia, in this scenario, Alabama loses, they're out. And then, again, if Oklahoma, Wake Forest, Cincinnati are undefeated, I mean, you can make a strong case. You take the four undefeated teams. They have the best records. I don't think that'd be ideal for the playoff committee to leave Alabama out, to leave Ohio State out as the two teams that, you know, especially Ohio State would probably be the next one cut, and leave them out for either a Cincinnati or a Wake Forest or Oklahoma. I don't think all three of those would get in, and Cincinnati may be the team that's left on the cutting room floor. With that said, this is all fun to speculate about and theorize, but you know something's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. Most likely, Wake Forest, they probably do lose. They're an underdog. Probably do lose to UNC on Saturday, and then that really changes things. What if Cincinnati slips up somewhere along the way? Oklahoma, will they be able to get past Baylor or even Oklahoma State? And if any of those teams suffer a loss, that really drastically changes things. Because to me, Oklahoma, just from the eye test, Oklahoma, Wake Forest, they haven't been impressive. But, I have to give them credit for winning all their games. It's unfair to ask for more than that. What kind of message are you sending? You go out there and win all of your games and then still say, but you know what, you're not one of the best teams. Well, you didn't win by enough, which I know is an argument in college football. But we've, sports, as Rob Parker says, sports is a very short menu. Wins and losses. That's all. That's all that's on the menu. You either win or you lose. And then you win all your games. Yeah, but you didn't win by enough. I have to give props. I have to give credit to teams that win, and especially when they're Power 5. I'm not talking about UTSA. They're undefeated. Let's talk about them as a playoff team. Now, if you're in the Big 12, if you're in, yes, even the ACC, you go undefeated. I mean, you deserve credit. It is hard to run the table in football. We know that. Any given Saturday or Sunday, we see upsets every week. To go a whole season and not slip up once in a Power 5, you deserve credit for that. We'll see how things shake out tonight with the first ranking and how things shake out here over the next couple of weeks, because you know there are going to be some changes. I was talking about Arch Manning last hour. There was this clip to come out of the Manning cast last night. John Stewart joined the broadcast in the first quarter. And one of the things John Stewart asked was if they could continue to produce more and more Mannings, because everyone's after Arch Manning. We know the Manning family. They're these great family of quarterbacks. This was the exchange on the Manning cast last night.
Can't you guys make another Manning? How hard is it to make another Manning? You've got this Bayou quarterback breeding program down there. You just keep making more Mannings. Make a couple for us.
My dad's stud fee has really gone up in the past 20 years.
John Stewart on the Manning cast last night. The stud fee. Yeah, I mean, you want those genes if you're a quarterback growing up. By the way, the Manning cast, I love the Manning cast. I think it's great. I think the Mannings are really good. I think they're really good on their own. And John Stewart was an awkward guest. I know he's a New Yorker. He's a Giants fan. But he's a comedian, right? He spent the whole quarter taking shots at the Giants. And Eli is sitting there, like, you know, between a rock and a hard place, because Eli still technically is an employee of he's like an ambassador of the Giants. He's on the payroll, right? So he's got to bite his tongue. And it was just really awkward. John Stewart's trying to do, like, material. And Peyton and Eli are the worst audience because they can't go on national TV and rip apart the Giants. Are you kidding? That wouldn't look good. So John Stewart's trying to make fun of the Giants the whole time. They're trying to put out the fires the whole time. It was just awkward. Plus, you factor in the delay. I mean, you heard it in the beginning of the clip. Peyton's talking about the game. John Stewart's making a joke. They're talking over each other because they're all on Zoom, and there's a delay, and they have different internets, and then somebody lags. And I love the Manning cast. I don't need all these guests unless they're in person or they have some high-tech setup where there's no delay. But they're in three different rooms, right, in three different states, talking on Zoom. There's a delay. You don't know who's talking or who's going to say what. They're stepping all over one another. I love the Manning cast. We don't need the guests. I don't need John Stewart on a Monday night. He's trying to run material. They're trying to talk about the game. It's an awkward fit. There was no chemistry in that appearance last night. It was very awkward. But there was that line about Arch Manning, right? Peyton can sling him. He can make crack jokes with the best of them. When it comes to Arch Manning, like I said earlier, I made the case of what could be appealing for Clemson. A listener reached out and said, in regards to Texas, what about along the same idea, along the same lines, you could be the guy that we say every year, right? Is Texas back? You could be the guy to bring them back and do it in the SEC. That would be appealing. Texas is the favorite in the eyes of Vegas to land Arch Manning. Sarkisian has had a good relationship with the Manning family going back some years. That would be an appeal as well. But it's a similar idea for Clemson without the SEC. But you say to him, like, hey, you know, we're down right now, but you know what we're capable of. You could come in and be the one that gets us back to that level. And you don't have to directly replace Trevor Lawrence. You can come in after the worst quarterback we've had in a few years. Makes it easier to replace those shoes with this program. That's all dependent on what happens at the quarterback position for Clemson next year. Hour 3 coming up next, where I was right, where I was wrong over the past week. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.